pumped about today's guest, Paul.
Yeah, Paul Galletti, also known as the Tattooed Gardener. Cool guy. He has a career that was at the Toronto Zoo, and now he's the Director of Horticulture at Toronto Botanical Gardens. And there's some things you're going to find out about him today that I didn't even know.
You're talking about passion, Frank. You're talking about Paul. I think that's why his name starts with a P. Passionate Paul is his whole shtick. I love the stories he told us, and he just really gets into life and gardening as a whole, and that's what we're all about.
And today, we're going to focus a little bit on decisions.
So I am so excited today to invite a gardener who is like no other, aka the Tattooed Gardener. That's how he's known by many, but he's also known by Paul Galletti. I hope I added the Scottish in there. Yeah. So right now, currently the Director of Horticulture at Toronto Botanical Gardens, but has a vast career that includes the Toronto Zoo. Paul, great to have you here today on Life Seeds.
Thank you so much. It's really exciting to be here. I think it's a really cool idea.
This is big, Paul. You are our first guest. So not going to lie, you're setting the stage, but I know the bar is going to be set as high as the tallest growing tree, Frankie.
Oh, wow. That was great. that was blooming good. Paul, I know a little bit about you in terms of the last few years, and I followed you as the Tattooed Gardener for several years, but tell me how you got into gardening. When did you get dirt under your fingernails, and a little bit about your journey?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been gardening pretty much my whole life. My dad was a gardener. So we always had the vegetable patch in the backyard and the asparagus garden and every fruit tree you can think of in the backyard. So I was climbing those fruit trees, picking off, fruit when I was 5 and 6, 7 years old. I really got into it when I was in my probably early teens, 13, 14 is probably when I sort of got the bug. And I got out there and I finally convinced my parents to let me have a garden. And I wanted it out front where everybody could see it. I didn't want it stuck in the backyard. I wanted it right on the sidewalk. I dug a little patch and very quickly took over what my father had done. And it just sort of spiraled from there. I mean, I kept into it. I was the director of the Waterloo Horticultural Society when I was 16. So it sort of, I was taking flowers down to Conestoga Mall to the flower shows and snipping off my dahlias and collecting. Dahlias was actually the first one I started collecting. And it just sort of kept going. I got out of the industry for a while and now I'm back in.
That's so cool. Yeah,
it is. When you think about that, 16. And when you think about horticultural societies, they're typically, like, I've done a lot of horticultural talks.
No, you?
They don't skew to 16-year-olds.
Really? Yeah. I have a quick question, though, Paul. What did mom and dad do?
My parents actually owned a music store when I was growing up. So they, a classical jazz and blues record shop. So I worked there as well. Music was always a big part of sort of my life as well. And they work really well together. Music and horticulture go hand in hand.
I've heard that plants grow well with music. Is that a myth?
I've heard that if it's country music, they just grow to get out of the house. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure which. It sort of depends what you're playing, I guess.
Oh my gosh, that's so good.
And I got to make a recommendation to you, Paul. Too, I just recently on Netflix watched a documentary called The Creative Brain, and The Creative Brain is a documentary that talks about creativity and actually talks about music and talks about jazz and blues. And gardening itself is a creative expression.
Yes, absolutely it is. It's as I like to say, the slowest of the performing arts.
Oh, I love that.
So tell me about today. Today you are the Director of Horticulture at Toronto Botanical Gardens. What does that involve?
It involves me being really lucky, to be totally honest. I get to sort of immerse myself in plants and gardens and passionate people every day. I get up in the morning, I walk around my garden. At sunrise, I'm out there checking it out. That's the best time to see gardens and best time to take photos. Hop in the car, spend the day in the botanical gardens. Really inspiring people and connecting them, with nature and with plants. And the job is interesting. I mean, you get to meet people that you never would think of in horticulture. And what I love about our gardens is that it doesn't exclude anyone. There are people that are 2 and there are people that are 98. And they all walk through the garden the same way. And they all stop at the same plants and take photos and talk about them and connect with each other, but also connect with plants. You know, I've seen a woman whose mother clearly had Alzheimer's or dementia, and they were walking through the garden. She said, "Do you remember we used to have this in our house?" And you know, the mother would, you know, sort of nod her head, and they were using the garden to reconnect and to have memories. And I think that was so inspiring to me, that it's not just a pretty place to spend time, that, you know, plants are locked into people's memories their whole lives. You know, there are roses that you smell. You know, for me, it's mock oranges. My grandparents had mock oranges outside their windows, and they did that on purpose. So in the spring, they'd open the window and the fragrance would come through. Mm-hmm. I can't walk by a mock orange now without remembering that.
I love that you brought that up, because friends of our family, like one of them passed away, but the woman in the couple had given my mom this cactus. And what was it? It was a Christmas cactus. Is that the right term? With the pink flowers. And just, it's so odd, Paul, because every time it flowers, we thought this thing was on death's door. My dad just clipped it right back, and it just came back blooming like crazy. And it just felt like normal was there. And there's just something so special about that.
There really is, you know, and even working at the zoo, you know, I saw families where the husband was from Africa, and his wife was Canadian or, you know, from somewhere else. Their kids had never really been back to Africa. You could tell by the way they were talking. And they were standing by the Sansevierias. And he said, "I can't believe they grew, these are weeds at home. My mother pulls these out and throws them in the comp." Like, he was amazed that we were potting these things up and growing them. But he was able to tell that story to his kids. And he was able to connect them to history of himself and of his family. And I just thought that was so neat to offer the, you know, the venue to have that happen and to sort of facilitate that. So
when people think about the Toronto Zoo, you often don't think about the plants that are at the zoo. And a lot of the experience for the animals there are a little bit about the plants, and you kind of try to up the game there a little bit as well while you were there at the Toronto Zoo.
For sure. I mean, they have one of Canada's largest tropical plant collections, and no one really knows them for that. You know, and they have acres and acres and acres under glass. You know, so when we're, you know, freezing in the winter and not sure what to do, there's nothing better than walking through one of those pavilions where you've got, you know, full-size Benjaminas and all these things that you might buy as $1.25 at the corner store. And you're able to see them as you would there and really sort of immerse yourself in that experience. So I think that's, you know, it's underrated at the zoo for sure. You know, horticulture there is amazing. They have one of the best plant collections I've seen. And I was lucky enough to sort of be the curator of that for a couple of years.
Speaking to that and the different exhibits that they have, I have never really thought about the fact that you are really trying to bring in the culture, the geographic area, the topography and everything into all of the exhibits because you think you're just there to see the animals. What's your favorite exhibit? Which one are you just bursting with pride about?
You know, they're all amazing in their own way. The pavilions are sort of set up biogeographically. I would say the Indo-Malaya Pavilion is probably my favorite. Just the plant material from there is amazing, and you can't not connect with the orangutans. You know, you can't help but not. So, Poopy, who's there,
do you relate to with them? Is that why?
Sorry, I relate to them perfectly. They have a female there that's been there forever. She's like 50 something years old, and she used to blow me kisses, and I was just taken by that, because she would just every time she saw me. And I talked to a keeper one time, and she said, "Oh, it's because you have facial hair." And I went, "Oh, that makes sense. I look like a freaking orangutan." So I guess that's why she was always kissing at me. But, you know, I still took it. I'll take the kisses when I can get them.
Oh, my gosh.
So tell me a little bit about the role of director of horticulture at the zoo. First, I want to talk about that at the zoo, because I know people listening to this would want to know what jobs there are in horticulture. And so, what does a director of horticultural do at the zoo? And then what are you doing currently? Kind of the difference.
Yeah, so at the zoo, I was actually a curatorial gardener. So I sort of managed the plant collection. So I did a lot of sourcing. As you can imagine, if you're buying African plants, they don't always come easily. You don't always find them at, you know, garden centers or things like that. So I would source them directly from a company in Africa. And then we would grow the seeds in the greenhouse, grow them up in some cases for 10, 12, 15 years before they would even go into the pavilions. So a lot of that, a lot of plant families, you know, when we're putting plants in tanks and in enclosures, we need to make sure they're not toxic. We need to make sure that's not going to injure the animal in any way. And that's something I have no formal education in horticulture. So for me, that was a big jump out of my comfort zone. And I was mortified of making a mistake, which is a good thing, because it really, I really did the deep dives into the different plant families and learned about them and things like that. I also wanted to be biogeographically sensitive. You know, if we have dart frogs from a specific area in South America, I don't want to pull plants from a completely different area. Most people wouldn't know the difference. They would just see the frogs. And as you mentioned, they're there to feed the animals. But once I started doing that, the keepers were coming to me and they were like, oh, that tank looks amazing. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And it was just one of those sort of, it started to snowball and get better. So a lot of the sourcing, a lot of, you know, I did exhibit designs. I helped with the amphibian enclosures. We grew a lot of food and stuff for the animals, browse, enrichment. You know, when they get bored, give them different things. They tear apart Benjamina trees and, you know, bugs eat this. And so there's always stuff happening around plants. There's a really deep connection between animals and plants. You can't really separate that. But when you start to highlight that, which was sort of my job, that's when it starts to make sense. And the world starts making sense and how close we're connected. And, you know, how you can make a difference, how one person can make a difference. We brought in an oil palm from, it's African, and it was the only plant I allowed to be planted outside of the pavilion that it should be in. And we planted it in the Indonesian pavilion. And it's because they are clearing the land to plant these as a cash crop, which is the palm oil. You know, and that's why it's so important to buy sustainably sourced palm oil and support companies that do. So I was able to draw that education for everybody and you know, have this there. This is what's doing it. This is what's killing, you know, the forests and all of the things that are happening there. And then to tie that back to plants, you know, we had the corpse flower that flowered. Yeah. I have the tattoo. I've worked with four of them now. It's such a cool plant family. And, you know, when you have a plant that flowers every 5, 6, 7, 6, 10 years for it to flower first, and it only flowers for 2 nights, and it heats up the human body temperature, you start digging into this. It's like, that's really cool. That's a really neat, and it stinks like the high heaven. It's disgusting. Yeah. In the most amazing way. Like I always tell people, it's like the most amazing, worst experience of your life.
I think we've all seen a corpse flower, right?
They're starting to come around. Yeah. They're coming around a lot more frequently. They just had one in Hamilton last week that was beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think it's amazing to watch people connect to a plant. You know, the zoo wasn't sure whether they should have an exhibit around the corpse flower. You have to open late. There was a lot that went into that. You think about the logistics of opening a zoo that normally closes at 9, keeping it open till midnight. Mm-hmm. Everything goes with that, lighting, all that. They did it. You know, and I give them credit for that because we threw that event together very quickly. But there were over 1,000 people lined up to get in.
Everyone wants to smell a dead body without smelling a dead body.
Right? And, so, but that, as a horticulturist, that sort of warms my heart. It's like, well, there is, you know, there are people here that still think this is really cool.
Paul, it's so clear that you have a passion for this, which is amazing to see, and that there is an endless amount of learning as well. I think so often in life we kind of choose one thing and we think that that's just what it is, but the magic in really just finding passion in life is realizing that off of that one little seed comes so many other sprouts from that. What has been something that has surprised you that you've learned or that you've started to explore more of that you never even knew about when you were getting into this?
I think for me, it's funny. I was always afraid to go into horticulture. I was always afraid I would lose the interest and the passion I have for it if I had to do it every day. If I had to get up and do this, would I still love it? And I was an employment counselor for 10 years. I helped people find jobs and I worked with new Canadians and I worked with, you know, adults with disabilities and things like that. So I really was immersed in employment. And, you know, I sort of woke up one day and I went, I need to take my own advice. I have to. You know, what do I love doing? And it was plants and it was horticulture. And, you know, this was about 10 years ago. I took a step out of my career, had no idea where it was going to take me. But I went to Plant World and I became a part-time sales rep at Plant World. And it snowballed. You know, within 8 years, I'm now director of horticulture. So, you know, I think the doors that you open that you have no idea and you're scared and, you know, you're not sure if you're making the right decisions, I think that's the best ones to take. And, you know, it will open another door and it will open another window. And, you know, it's sort of, I swore when I got the job at the zoo, that was my dream job. That's the job I wanted since I was in public school. And I thought I'd be there for life. I honestly thought that would be my job. And it wasn't. I mean, I loved it. My experience was amazing at the zoo. But there were bigger things. And, you know, with the Toronto Botanical Garden, we have a major expansion coming up in the next couple of years. We're going from 4 acres to 36 acres. To be part of that and to be part of the experience of bringing a garden that's going to connect so many people from now forward, how can I pass that up? You know, how can I possibly step aside? So I went for it, you know, and I thought it was the longest shot in the dark. I honestly did. And then I made it to the third round and I called my mom and she's like, you got this. And I was like, I can't believe, like, I could not believe that it was just coming into play. And I was just being myself. I was just being me and a nerdy plant guy who's been into plants his whole life. And, you know, as a teenager was kid, you know, joked about it. Like kids were like, oh, that's an old person thing. And, you know, and it's funny because yeah. Now those are the same people who message me on Facebook and say, I have a question. So, you know, it's sort of like they just needed to catch up.
I say that all the time. You know, I used to get teased all the time because I had a huge passion for flowers and plants. And, you know, my background's with my family in that business. And so my nickname, Frankie Flowers, was a nickname that I used to get teased about. And I say that all the time now. The people who used to tease me and make fun of me are the ones asking for advice right now. They're the ones looking for me to help guide them. And it's kind of like, you know, even at a young age, if your passion's there and it's truly what you love, don't let other people steer you in a different direction. I thought I was going to be a lawyer because my family needed a lawyer. And I was the first one to graduate university. And that's what they said. But then I was like, you know what? I love plants. Plants don't talk back. That's the best thing, right? Law, people are going to talk back to me all the time. But I think that's a great lesson, right? Is that even younger people watching this today, you may be teased for something that you want to express. If it's music, creativity, if it's gardening, culinary, don't be afraid.
What I'm totally getting from both of your stories too is overcoming that fear of changing direction. Like being a lawyer, that's so different to what you're doing now, Frankie. And Paul, same thing. I love that you wanted to take your own advice to make that decision. What was that moment of making that decision like? Was it a slow moment of growth to really come to that kind of pivotal change? Or did you just wake up one day and think, no, we gotta go for it?
A little bit of both, to be honest. I mean, I think we always, when we're passionate about something, it's always in the back of our mind. I think it's always there. It's whether we choose to listen to it and whether we think we'll be successful if we do make that step. I think my biggest lesson has been that there are a million pathways to get wherever you're going. And, you know, education absolutely is one of them. And I would never, you know, put down someone who chooses that path. That wasn't my path. You know, and I remember when I got into this at the level that I'm at now, I was nervous. I was nervous to go in and speak at a university because these people are better educated than I am. They're not. They may have a piece of paper, but I have way more practical knowledge. And, you know, to have someone say, I can't do that because I don't have this, or I can't do that because I didn't go that way, I don't think is true. I think sometimes your path might be longer and it might wind down a different road before it gets there. But in horticulture, there's no one way to do anything. There's 50 ways to do it. And, you know, you can still end up with the same result. So I think that's, you know, really trusting your gut, trusting yourself. And I mean, I've had people support me and be my cheerleaders all along. And, you know, that's really important is having people tell you you can do it even when you think you can't, you know, but as long as you have those people and you trust yourself, it works out.
Mm-hmm. One of the themes for today I wanted to talk about was decisions. And I think one of the hardest things in life and even the hardest things for a gardener is to decide on whether it be a plant or whether it be a decision in life. So are you a good decision maker or are you indecisive?
I love that you're wavering on making this decision.
I probably am a good decision maker, but I probably wing it a lot more than I should. You know, when I guess I do that in life too. I mean, when I go to a garden center, my garden is full. Like if you've ever seen photos, my garden is, I have used every single square inch of my garden. And yet whenever I go to a garden center, I will still buy three more Japanese maples to add to my garden. And I'll worry about it when I get home. And it always works. So I think that's, you know, decisions, absolutely. The garden, they come easier as you get in there and as you sort of develop your garden, as you develop your life, your decisions become easier. And I think, you know, when you're on the right path, that happens. I mean, I wanted to show you guys, this is my entire tub of daylily seeds. I'm a daylily hybridizer. I have no room for any of these. Like, there are 20, 30, 40 packaged seeds in each one. And each daylily seed will give you a different plant. Right. Each one holds genetics different from each other, but similar, like siblings. So how do I choose out of this decision-making which ones I should grow? You grow them all. And then you figure it out. So, you know, and I think that's how you get where you're going. And it works.
When I was trying to choose my career, I think that was a lot about it, is you can mull over and decide, oh yeah, for a long time I was actually on the wealth management tour and I was an executive assistant for a wealth manager. So I'd plan his events and I was like, this is so great. And then I started to see people do what I truly wanted to do. And I allowed that envy almost steer me in the direction. Whereas envy, jealousy, we can often look at it as a negative. It actually became my North Star. Is there anyone that you're looking at in horticulture currently that you would see as your North Star, coming from a point of like exploration is learning in your journey versus that solid education?
You know, I think one thing I have learned absolutely is that you can learn something from everyone.
Yeah.
I was schooled by a five-year-old on carnivorous plants at the zoo. And, you know, I learn from Monty Don every time I watch a show. So, you know, I think having the open mind to sort of know that there's not one person out there that can't teach you something. And, you know, they don't have to be a horticulturist to teach you something. My biggest lesson was when I was 14 or 15, there was an older lady up the road, she's in her 80s at that time. And I used to go up and walk around the garden with her. Every time I see her on our porch, I'd walk up and say hi. And she said, Paul, I've been gardening for 70 something years. You know, that's 60 years longer than you've been around. And she said, you'd think I'd have it right by now. She said, I don't. She said, every year I have a tall thing in front and a short thing in back, or I have two colors that don't go well together, or I have two things that don't flower when they're supposed to. And she said, I think that's why I love gardening. She said, it's never done. And I've kept that. And I look at my garden now and I'm like, you're not done. You know, like it's not the way you necessarily have it end up being. It's sort of like constantly evolving and changing thing. So I think that's that, you know, lesson. I have so much respect for Marjorie Harris. I mean, she is sort of someone for me who I have every one of her books. When I went to my first gardening conference, she was the keynote speaker. And I was, you know, a teenager. And I stood in line to have her sign my books. And we're friends now. You know, and I would have never thought that, you know, back at, when I was a kid. So excited that she signed my books. And I ran home and showed my mom and dad. And they were like, that's nice. You know, and it's so neat to have, you know, someone who's really mentored my career, not my career, but my path, and to be able to sit down in her garden now. And I actually named a daylily after her last year. And I went and planted in her garden. And I thought that was such a cool full circle moment for me, was actually being able to take a plant that I had hybridized, named for her, and planted it in her garden.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many similarities, my life to your life. I'm not formally educated in horticulture as well. You know, how did I learn the most about horticulture was we had a big, big book at the garden center called The Ortho Problem Solver. And when people would come in with their problems, I would grab their leaf and we'd go walk up to this book and I'd flip through the pages to find out what the leaf was and maybe what the insect causing the problem. And then I would listen to people at the garden center as well with their questions and them tell me their tips. And even when you go to talks, you actually learn more. And as you do that frequency and that more and more and more, but every year, you know, even though you think you get it, and if somebody says to you, I have a hosta growing in full sun, there's sometimes a good chance they probably do have a hosta growing in full sun. There is no rights and wrongs, and you'll always be surprised by the garden. You're always, it's kind of like life. Like life is like a box of chocolates. The garden is like that same thing where you never really know what you're going to get based on weather. And sometimes what I love about the garden is tinkering. I call it tinkering. I'm just out there and I tinker. That means I'm just being busy at doing nothing.
Yep. There's no shortage of that.
One of my favorite quotes by Iris Apfel, now I'm going to butcher the exact wording, but the essence of it is if you're not interested, you're not interesting. So it doesn't matter what you are passionate about. If you are extremely just dedicated and dove right in, it's interesting to talk about. What are you personally, when it comes to horticulture and growing, what are you just absolutely so engulfed in currently?
Currently, I mean, the industry is changing right now. There's a pivot in the industry, and I'm loving it. There's, you know, these plant collectives are popping up, and they're these Instagram groups. And it's people who, whether they had to or whether they took the opportunity to, because now they have the opportunity to, are starting plant businesses. And they are growing and they're importing. And they are building these communities. And the communities are thousands and thousands and thousands of people large who are supporting them and who are buying their plants and who are, if they have a problem, they're messaging each other. They're sharing pictures. They're not all going to the garden centers like they used to. They're not all saying, oh, I have to go to White Rose, or oh, I have to go here. They're reaching out to people in their little community. And, you know, I'm really lucky because I've been able to tap into that. And, you know, my plant collection, I have about 700 plants at home now.
Wow.
And one of them I paid $3,000 for last week. $3,000 for a plant.
What one was it?
It's right here. I'll show you. It's sneaking in. It's going to be like that traveling gnome that just shows up randomly in pictures and stuff.
Okay.
So this is Philodendron Firebird. Probably one of the only ones in Canada that has this plant. I was not letting it go. It's been one of my top wish list plants for a lot of years, and I have never seen it cross my path. Never. So I saw it come up on auction, and it was me, and there was someone in Vancouver that was bidding on it. And every time he put up a bid, I just went right on top. Like, I was just on it. I was like, I am not letting this go. Like, and we got all the way up to $3,000. And then he just bowed out. He said, it's yours, sir. And, so, you know, it's, but this is the sort of thing that, you know, you would never get in a garden center. This is something that a collector has brought in and has either propagated, or this one was actually the plant that she had brought in. There's so many more plants out there now that we have access to than we have ever had. My parents could pick 3 aglaonemas and, you know, they didn't have the selection that we have now. And this new plant community, they're collectors. And to me, that's exciting. They are not just buying $2 plants. They're buying thousands and thousands of dollars worth of plants. And they're taking care of them really well. I mean, mm-hmm. I've gone into some of these people's houses and my jaw hits the floor. I'm like, my plants never look that good. What are you doing? And they're so happy to share that knowledge. And I think, you know, as a horticulturist, that warms my heart and gives me hope that, you know, this will still continue. It's just going to be different than it has been leading up to now.
If you guys are listening just audio version, we'll be sure to put a picture of that on at Life Seeds podcast on Instagram, because I'm sure everyone's thinking, what does this thing look like?
$3,000 plant. It's funny. You know, when I was in New York City, I think it was 4 years ago, and I was there and my son was really into shoes, collecting shoes at the time. And so I went into New York City and I saw one of the stores there had a pair of Nike shoes for $60,000. And I was like, but the way that they displayed the shoe, so I got back to Ontario and I had a discussion with my uncle and then also a discussion with Terra Nurseries, which is Andrew at Terra. And I said, you know what? I could see people getting more into plant collectors as long as you kind of, you prop the plant up, you tell the story of the plant, you tell why it's unique, you tell why it could be one of very few. It is indeed, like, people have collected stamps, they've collected these things, but a plant is something that will always continue to give. So I'm happy, as you are, to see that people are collecting plants, and I think it's only going to get bigger. And I think, and people have been collecting plants for hundreds of years, though, too.
Yeah, no, but this is the jump off point, I think. Like, you know, I've thought a lot about it, and I've talked to a lot of people. What happens when COVID's over and everybody goes back to work? Do they still love the plants that have really connected them with nature, or do they get busy again and sort of forget about them? And I don't think that's going to happen. I think people have realized that connection, and they've realized that they can nurture something and grow something, and that it works, and that they react when you take care of them. You know, that's what it's all about. And in Toronto especially, we have all these little boxes in the sky where people don't have a connection to nature. They can't just walk down the road and go for a walk through the forest. They, you know, they have to take TTC somewhere or something. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is really their way to connect with nature. And I think now that they have that connection, I don't see that getting any smaller. You know, the downside is the responsibly sourced plants. You know, we mm-hmm. talked about the Philodendron spiritus sancti. There's like six of them left in the wild, and they had to build a fence and buy the land so that no one would poach them. So, you know, and the more and more people that are importing, if they're not doing their checking, where are you growing this? Where are you getting this? Is this responsibly sourced? Is this from your own farm? You know, we all have to ask those questions as importers. We have to understand that what we're getting is okay. And that, you know, it does matter what happened before it got to you. You know, if it's not, I don't go there. I really don't. If you can't tell me where that came from, I'm sorry. I don't care if I want it this much. I'm not buying it.
And that is, and I think so that that's interesting. Where
we have to be responsible.
Wow.
You know, it's like blood diamonds. it's the same kind of story. It doesn't matter if there's money somewhere, there are people that will try to take opportunity and do bad things. And people don't think plants are worth a lot, but it's unbelievable what plants that are desired are worth.
And what makes them desirable. That's the thing, right? You know, if we look at Monstera albos, I mean, 2-3 years ago, you could get one for $70, you know, and most people wouldn't pay you for them. They're going for thousands of dollars now, you know, and nothing really changed other than the fact that there's a bunch more people in the industry and some people started posting some really good pictures of them. You know, and I have to have that, you know.
Yeah, I like want to turn this guy.
See, there, yeah,
I just sort of, do you know what? I should make this my background, guys.
That's awesome.
There you go.
That's fantastic.
Here, I just got a little jade beside me. And,
oh yeah, we gotta show that we're playing.
I got like aloe vera hanging out.
I'll just hold my Sansevieria while we're chatting.
My Monstera is over in the other room.
Paul,
plants on parade.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of fun. Yeah.
I love that you mentioned just bringing those plants indoors. I've been doing a lot of research on hygge, which is one of the main words in Denmark and the Danish, some of the happiest people in the world. And one of the concepts within hygge, it's a lot of things. It's basically evoking a feeling of coziness. But one of the pivotal things to embrace hygge inside your home is bringing the outdoors in. And something for me that I've noticed bringing the outdoors in and obviously embracing so much plant life in our condo is that it just creates these amazing rituals, like watering every single month or just seeing if they need water, wiping down their leaves. Just, it makes me feel so good when I wake up in the morning and I open up the shutters and I see the shine, the sun is shining through and I'm like, here you go, my babies. Like, is there any ritual that you really feel is just something that fills your heart or something that you would suggest that a new plant owner might really notice when they first kind of bring in some houseplants?
I think, don't assume it's the schedule. You know, I think so many people think I'm going to water every Saturday. The entire life of this plant, I'm going to water every Saturday. and then, you know, and I'm going to give it this really big pot. It's going to grow into it. It's only this big now, but it's going to grow into this giant pot. And then it dies. And everyone's like, but I gave it a new pot and I was watering it every week. And I'm like, yeah, you killed it. You killed it. But let me tell you why. And then, you know, so I think really doing the research, I enjoy doing the research into the plants that I have. Where did this plant come from? What conditions does it have where it grew? You know, I have had terrible luck. My entire life, I have killed every single begonia I have ever bought in my entire life. So this year I imported about $1,200 worth of begonias from Hong Kong. And I'm like, Paul, you're crazy. Like, this is stupid. What are you doing? You kill all of these things. And I needed to challenge myself. I think, you know, we go through this, you have to challenge yourself in horticulture. And I think, you know, if you're just getting into it, that's a challenge. On its own. You don't need to challenge yourself any more than just getting your first one. But when you've been doing this for 30 years, that challenge becomes a little more difficult to find. So, you know, they have this begonia Darth Vaderiana. It's actually called Darth Vaderiana. And, you know, so I started looking at it and it's this black leaf begonia. It's beautiful. So I bought one. Literally within 2 days, it was dead. I was like, okay, that didn't work. And it was not cheap. Like but I've heard, I mean, I got emails from people going, Paul, begonia growers kill this plant. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? And I'm like, I'm going to do it. Bought another one. Killed it. It lasted a couple of weeks. I now have one that I've had for like 4 months. So, you know, it's like, don't give up. If you kill something, I've killed more plants than most people have ever bought.
Yes.
People are so afraid to kill a plant. And no, I'm not advocating to kill your plants, but that's when you learn. And I think if you really like the plant, you're going to try again. And you're going to try something different than you did last time. And maybe that's your lesson. And now you're going to have that plant forever. So research. It's so easy to get information now. Just make sure your source is reliable. You know, go to people like Frank, go to people, you know, Marjorie Harris, go to people like myself who have been doing this. And, you know, check into the books, check into the websites, send an email. You know, I try and respond to every email I get at the Tattooed Gardener. And, you know, I have 10 million people that my posts hit a month now. I still try and reply. And sometimes they're like, I'm so sorry to bother you with this question. And I'm like, it's no bother. Knowledge is nothing if you don't share it. And, you know, I think, what's the point? I've learned that lesson. So please let me help you. Let me answer that question for you. And then guess what? When somebody asks you that question 5 years down the road, pass that along. And you know, that's all I want. So I think that's, you know, really just understanding and being good about it.
You speak a lot right there about failing. I kill, like, if you've ever grown a plant, you killed the plant. That's why what I usually do is when I start my talks, I usually ask, has anybody here killed the plant? And if everybody puts up their hands, then I know I have an audit, honest crowd. If nobody puts up their hands, I call them all liars.
It's true. He does do that.
Because,
like, you're
liars. Because if you ever grown a plant, you've killed the plant. The fear of failure is something that holds us all back, whether it's in the garden or whether it's in life. But a lot of the times, I call it your garden groove. Sometimes it takes you a couple shots at something to find that groove and not to be fearful of failure. It's like, what happened? What could I learn from this at this moment with this plant? And try to figure out location and just some things variables that you can change ever so slightly to be successful. Yeah. And as a career counselor, somebody that helped people with employment, it's kind of the same thing.
It's 100% the same thing. You're absolutely right. And it's, as you said, it's in life and in the garden and in relationships and everywhere else. You know, there's failures and that's where you sort of grow and that's where you learn. And then you take that to the next step, you know, and you take that to your next garden or your next relationship or your next job. And you learn and you build and, you know, hopefully by the time you decide that you're not doing that anymore, you're sort of where you want it to be.
Yeah, you figured out your manure.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so true. Paul, what is a legacy you want to leave? Because it sounds like these plants just will continue to grow whether we all become mulch or not.
It's true. You know, it's funny. I've been thinking a lot about that. I mean, I'm 43, so I've got, you know, 20 years or so left in my career.
Optimism, man.
As far as a legacy goes, I don't have kids. I'm probably not going to have kids. And when I make a daylily and register it, I feel like that's a little piece of my legacy that's going to outlive me. But, you know, I've been thinking about it on a bigger scale, you know, with the horticultural industry in general. We're working on this big expansion with the TBG right now. And, you know, the garden director, Harry, is amazing. And, you know, this is his sort of his want. And before he retires, he really wants this to happen for Toronto and for Canada and to have this horticultural destination in Toronto. And I respect that so much. And, you know, I'm doing everything I can to make sure that happens properly. But there's something missing in that. And it's a conservatory. It is this, you know, a tropical glass house where, you know, I know that people are connecting to tropical plants. I know that that's an area of the industry that we're not able to tap into right now. We don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the facilities. So I feel like that might be mine. You know, in 20 years, big capital campaign to have a big conservatory at a botanical garden. Something like that, just that I can go, yeah, you know what? I'm leaving something. And it's something that I think is important. And I can't think of anything more important than connecting to nature.
That's awesome. I would love to help you make that happen in time too. TBG, there's something coming up this summer too. I know you've been working with my good friend Tanya on as well. You're going to do some trials there. That's kind of exciting. Why don't you tell us about that a little bit too?
Yeah, I actually met Tanya through when I worked at the zoo, and we were going to do some trials there, and just didn't end up happening. wasn't meant to be. So you know, when I got into the TBG, I called her, like, I think my first week there. And I said, so, do we want to try this again? And she was, I love her. Like, I adore her so much. She came out, we laughed, we, you know, and she got it. She understood me. She understood my passion. She understood why I wanted to do this. And, you know, it's an exciting time. The Toronto Botanical Garden is such a unique place. I mean, it's a free botanical garden. So anybody can walk through. You don't have to pay. You don't have to do anything aside from the $250 parking, which goes right back to the garden. Normal botanical gardens don't have the opportunity to connect with people that don't know they like plants yet. You know, there are a lot of people who would never pay $20 to walk through a botanical garden, but they have no problem walking through a free park. And while they're in that park, they see something. It might be a Rudbeckia. It might be a metasequoia tree. It might be a tulip. That's that one thing that got them interested. And to have a place where you can do that for free, I think is such a cool opportunity. So, you know, that's what we're doing. The trial gardens are going to be amazing. You know, Tanya's coming in. We've designed amazing beds. They're going to showcase some of their best stuff. And Ball Floral has an incredible catalog of plants. I have been, you know, I've been going to their job trials, checking things out, and I'm always impressed. There's always something that I have to have in my garden. And that's what a botanical garden should be. You should be able to go to a botanical garden and go, oh my God, see what I saw today? I have to have that. You know, and I think that's what's going to happen with this, is people are going to go, yeah, where do I get that? Where do I sign up? You know, and going to the trials with Tanya is even better, because she's just as passionate as I am. And she'll take me to all the ones that I would never have even stopped at when I walk by. And I don't know if it's intuitive, I don't know what it is, but she'll stop at the yellow petunia and she'll be like, I have to tell you about bee's knees. And she'll tell you everything about that petunia, everything. And I'm like, I don't like petunias. Like, I really don't. I'm not a petunia guy. By the time I finish that row, all I've taken pictures of are freaking petunias. And I have to have them in my garden now. And it's her passion. And it was her story with that, and it was her showing me what the other yellow ones were and what bee's knees does, and I literally would never have even stopped there. So I'm really hoping that, you know, what she was able to do with me, we're able to do for all of the visitors that sort of come through. And it's going to be an interesting, it's sort of a showcase slash trial. I mean, we're not really formally trialing things, but we are going to do some, you know, some social media voting and things like that. Which ones did you like, which ones didn't you? And we expanded it into what used to be the kitchen garden at the TBG. The kitchen garden just wasn't working. You know, the trees have grown up around it. It wasn't a full sun location anymore. And a lot of things were getting stolen. You know, we planted vegetables and they were not even making it to being ripe. They were getting stolen. Mm. So, you know, as a public park and as a botanical garden that's supposed to be doing things right and supposed to be sort of highlighting plants, we weren't really doing that very well with there. So we've switched it. So that's going to be part of the trial gardens this year as well, which will be really nice because they're actually raised beds. So I think, you know, people are going to be able to connect with plants a little bit better if they're that much closer to them.
That's awesome. I have a selfish question right now. You're the tattooed gardener.
I am.
How many tattoos do you have?
You know what? I lost count. It's only on my arms. I only have my sleeves, and I've sort of been working away at them. My sister did get me a gift certificate for Christmas. So I will be adding to the tattoos shortly, whenever life gets back to normal and they can open again. I'm trying to decide what I want to do, a nice back piece. But mm-hmm. you know, I want to sort of incorporate my life, and it might be plants and animals. It might be, you know, a couple of the animals from the zoo with a bunch of plants. I have very few plant tattoos. I have a lotus, which is a plant that I absolutely love and I have in my garden, and I take a billion photos with it when it flowers. And you know, the corpse flower, the stinky penis flower that's on my arm. And that's, you know, those are the two things that I have. And, you know, everyone thinks that's hilarious that I went and got that tattoo. But it was such a pinnacle moment in my life and my career, was becoming the celebrity wife for that flower. I mean, I did interviews across Canada, into the States, in Europe, they were interviewing me on the news. It was a big deal. You know, I met the Governor General of Indonesia, who just, how did you get this to bloom? It's so young and it's so small. And so it was really sort of, for me, that pinnacle moment where I can do this. I got this, right? Like, I literally got this. And, you know, I've done four of them now. So I think that's that's why I have that one. And I'm just trying to, tattoos to me are art. And I don't want to get one that I regret. I don't want to get one that I look at 10 years from now and go, why did I do that? I didn't get my first tattoo till I was like 26 or 27. You know, and it's sort of, I'm very careful with the ones that I choose.
So I have a tattoo of a tree frog that's on my chest, over my heart, that I got when I was 19 years of age. So there's some things that I need to do now with that tattoo because it no longer resembles a tree frog. So do you use the same artist, and what one would you recommend? This is just, we're having some fun here. Yeah,
yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I've my tattoo artist, my original tattoo artist, retired, really unfortunately. She's still a very good friend of mine, and I wish she would do it more. But I've discovered Archive Tattoos, and they are absolutely amazing in Toronto. They are friends of mine who own it, and they are also plant collectors. They have the most amazing cactus collection I've seen in a long time. They actually built a greenhouse in their backyard to keep it going. So I figured, you know, if plant people, they've got to be good people. And then I started checking out their art, and I was like, oh, they're good artists too. So, you know, and I think at the end of the day, you want, it's art. That's what tattoos, good tattoos should be, is art. And you are the canvas. So yeah. To find an artist that gets that and puts the time into the designs, and you know that yours is the only one. And I think that's, for me, that's what's special.
After 2020 and 2021, this is like the first year I've thought, I've always loved tattoos, but I've just never found them for me. But after all of this, I'm like, I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready to go for it. Paul, I have one more question for you from me. I don't know, Frank, if you have more, but my last question that I just really want to know is, what's the greatest lesson that you've learned for life that you've learned from the garden or plants?
I think take risks. Take risks and enjoy the ride. It's not a destination, it's a journey. I am a self-proclaimed zone pusher in the garden. I have a monkey puzzle tree in the garden that has been there 5 years. I have a polonia tree that's 25 feet tall. I have Japanese laurel. Sometimes you have to nurture it a little bit more. Sometimes you have to give it a little bit more protection. But if you really want it, it works, and you'll make it work. And I think, you know, that's true in the garden, and that's true in life. I think if you want it enough, let it happen.
I love that.
I do too. So the Tattooed Gardener, if people want to find out more about you, you have a great blog, you have a great following out there. Do you want to give a little bit of shout out at how people can connect with you?
Yeah, plug it.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, I'm all over the place. Facebook is my main platform. So if you check out the Tattooed Gardener there. I do use Instagram as well. So it's the_tattooed_gardener. Is my Instagram. And feel free to send me a message or come and see me at the Botanical Garden. You know, often in the garden, and we can connect and talk plants.
I'll make sure all of that is in the show notes description, and we'll also have all of his links on Instagram at Life Seeds Podcast. Paul, this is amazing.
Thanks so much, Paul, for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. And keep blooming. Keep being you. And next time I'll turn my ringer off on the phone too.
Thank you so much, Paul.
No worries.
Thanks, guys.
Frank, Paul was so nice.
A lot of energy. He spent $3,000 on a plant.
Would you spend that much money on a plant?
I look at $3,000 and I say to myself, I could buy a lot of plants with $3,000. I'm not at that level yet. I'm not where I would spend $3,000 on a plant. Maybe because I've recently gone through a divorce and I don't have $3,000.
Hey, game respects game though, man. That was so great. Question to you guys. Let us know on the podcast page. I think I'll post a little photo, Frank, there saying, would you spend $3,000 on a plant? And we'll see what you guys have to say.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Plant collector, all around great guy. Learned a lot today. And also his kind of journey. Fantastic that he went from an employment counselor to a full-time gardener.
I love that you asked him about his tattoos.
Yeah, because I need to do something with my tattoo.
Can you tell me about why you got that tattoo?
Tree frog, 19 years of age. I was really into the environment and gardening even at 19. And I knew that's something that's close to my heart and would never go away, like a tattoo. So that's why I got a tree frog.
I know everyone was just itching to ask you that question. Yeah. I left that recording thinking, oh shoot, I should have asked him why, but I'm glad that we're catching up here. I do a fact check for you.
Okay.
From our first episode,
okay,
you were debating whether or not a seed was viable if you did the water test, and you found.
Yeah, so the water test is when you're supposed to take your seeds and you put them in water for 15 minutes, and if it sinks or floats, which one is viable? And this is the time in life where if it sinks, it's good. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. So if your seed sinks, that means it's viable. Go ahead and plant. But if it floats, let those guys float away because they won't germinate today.
I really like that a lot. Okay, last but not least, guys, this is our first episode with an actual guest. Let us know how we did. Let us know only good things, though. We're very sensitive.
No, I'm fine with manure. You can tell me your manure. There's no problem.
If you do want to tell us something about the podcast, you can rate and review us, right, Frank?
Yeah, rate and review us. And whatever the rating is, I think it's 5-star. I think we're 5-star.
You guys can find us at Life Seeds Podcast on Instagram. And of course, next week on Wednesday, when we discover a new topic with life and growing.
Yeah, no weeds in our life.